Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and we're back for part three of what has been a fascinating discussion of cap planning with Paul S., otherwise known as the NFL analyst on Twitter. So absolutely fantastic, very compelling work Paul's put together on the Ravens salary cap situation. Paul, how you doing?
Feeling great, Ken.
Appreciate having you on. It always seems strange when we record back-to-back like this to introduce a guest for the third time, and they don't have as much to say about what's going on. They don't want to talk about the Bills game again, although it's bothering all of us still. But we talked about the offense on the second show. On the first show, we gave I think, a very good overview of the Lamar Jackson contract, some of the challenges the Ravens face. Probably a good idea to listen to these three in order. Wouldn't you agree, Paul?
I absolutely agree.
All right. So, but in this third one, we're going to talk about the defense. We're going to get to that in a moment. The last episode, we talked also about the free agents the Ravens lost and what a great job Eric DaCosta did, basically in picking and choosing between some duds that he allowed to go or weren't priced right, you know, is maybe a better way to put it. But the only player who really got away from the Ravens who would have been a player they would have really loved to have in 2024, honestly, I think was Kevin Zeitler.
I would tend to agree with that, Ken. I would tend to agree.
All right. But in this episode, I'm going to talk about the defense, but also give a little bit of background on Eric DaCosta's draft history since he took over from Ozzie in 2019. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, Eric DaCosta is really putting together a run that I'm going to research more, but I think it's going to be tough to compare to over the last 5 years. He is just so consistent, so solid in all these picks, even some of the picks who we thought he might have missed on, such as the OAs and the Batemans that didn't develop. Boom, there you go. Even they came up. And if you go back to the 2020 draft, I've done some surface-level numbers, and I truly think 2020 might be one of the best Ravens drafts ever just because of the sheer depth in that draft. I mean, when you go down the list – it's really crazy. 2022 is coming up on their heels as well. But the five-year period he's been doing this has just been astounding. And it's the reason why we have so many young players to give contracts to.
Let's take a look through that 2020 draft really quickly and exactly who the Ravens got and eventually had to make decisions on re-signing because this group has passed. Patrick Queen, the number one overall pick, number 28 overall pick in the first round, but their first pick. Then J.K. Dobbins, both left in free agency. Nnamdi Madubuike obviously signed the big contract with the Ravens, is still here. Devin Duvernay left in free agency, contributed to the comp formula. Malik Harrison signed a team-friendly deal. He's on a qualified vet contract, so he makes an extra $1 million. It doesn't count against the caps. That's nice. Tyree Phillips was cut, I think, after 2 years, might have been three, in there.
And he start at guard for the Giants for an entire season, along with Ben Bredesen.
Yeah, and Ben Bredesen also gone. He was actually traded after – was he traded in his first camp or after 1 year? Did he actually with the team?
I think it was after 2 years maybe, or maybe it was one.
It's after, It's after one. It's before the 21 season. He was traded in camp. So he actually played in 10 games. I think it was primarily as a sixth offensive lineman that he would have been used, or maybe even as a special teams player exclusively. But he then went to the Giants and has played there for 3 years in that Tampa Bay in 24, where he's got another, looks like a starting role there. Actually, yeah, a starting role in Tampa. So anyway, pretty hellaciously good draft so far. And then they're not done because Broderick Washington is their fifth round pick. And he was one of the first re-signees that they had to keep kind of the band together there. Kind of a disappointment in terms of living up to that contract.
Yeah, but I mean, as you go down this list, I mean, have we seen a miss yet, Ken?
No, not a way wide of the mark. But we might be getting there. The sixth round pick was James Prochet. You know, did not have a great end to his season in Baltimore. It could have all turned around if he'd caught the ball in the end zone on the final play of 2022, which would have been a diving, miraculous, potentially game-tying catch. Not a catch he was expected to make by any stretch. But boy, would that have turned around his entire career, which otherwise was characterized by some inopportune events at some inopportune times. Let's put it that way. And then the seventh round pick was the PFF darling Geno Stone, who was listed as their 53rd best overall player. I liked him as a split field safety, and he did a wonderful job in his final year for the Ravens. But boy, did he have the right year in a contract year to get out of town and give the Ravens some comp value. And now what I'm hearing is that Cincinnati may actually cut Geno Stone.
They could, because that defense is a wreck on the back end, and Geno Stone was a big part of it. So yep. I suspect that is definitely a possibility.
So if Stone were to return to Baltimore, I think he's now at a point where he'd need another 1 year prove it deal to get back in the graces, but maybe he's a guy who signs for 2 years, $5 million. Maybe that kind of contract would work also. But Geno needs to get his foothold again in the NFL, and maybe coming back to the Ravens would be a good thing. People forget that the Ravens lost most of Geno Stone's draft value because they cut him during his first season and then had to reacquire him after the Texans had him for a time. And he re-signed his same contract, as I understand it, to work it out to 4 years ago. So he never became a UFA or an RFA during that point, I should say, which was a good thing for the Ravens and really worked out with that fourth season being such a breakout year for him.
Yeah, I mean, again, you just go from rounds 1 through 7, and I've done a lot of draft research, and you could argue, I mean, even with Prochet, he wasn't a bust. He went on to somewhere else even after us. Every one of these players was a hit of some sort, and that is just impossible to do in one draft, much as, you know, one draft, maybe you get 4 solid guys out of it, maybe 5. To get every single one all the way through the 6th and 7th round. And let me tell you, when you get down into the 6th and 7th, I know you say that the Ravens are different because Eric DaCosta is so good at that later round. But the hit rates are roughly 11% in the 6th round and about 7% in the 7th round.
What's your A over B there? Your 11% represents chance to be still in the league after X number of years, or what is it?
I graded on a sliding scale relative to draft position, because obviously we're going to expect a lot more out of a first round pick than we are out of a 6th round pick. So
I buy that. When you're on the show, one of the things you do, if you quote a percentage, you're accountable for making me understand how you did it. So if you say 7 or 11%, you got to be able to tell me what it is. I agree. The hit rate is much lower, and however you would define it, there's a much lower chance. And even look at the Ravens' history of 7th round picks. They don't have a lot of big wins in their entire history. A lot of big wins in the 6th round, but not a lot of big wins.
You get into the 6th, 7th round, if the guy makes the team, it's a win initially. If he ends up fulfilling the contract and then going on to another contract, I mean, it can't be looked at as anything else other than a huge success.
All right. The Ravens then in 2022... Well, at 21, it was a post-COVID year, and it's not like the Ravens, you know, completely whiffed on the whole year. They got Rashad Bateman and Adafe Owe in round one, who have probably, as of right now, more or less exactly lived up to their back end of the first round billing. Fair enough?
Correct.
All right. And then Ben Cleveland in round three has been the real disappointment. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you're going to occasionally miss on a three. Brandon Stevens, did they get their value out of him? Probably. I still think he was an overdraft, by the way, in round three. But fair enough, yeah, value on him.
Mid-round pick comes in and starts for you for 2 years. I mean, that's again, you're just as likely to completely whiff on that pick. Yeah. So
Tylan Wallace in round four, I think, has been a fine special teams player, and a lot in the mold of Chris Moore, which is a similarly drafted position towards the end of the fourth round at number 131. Sean Wade in round five was traded before that season even began, before the 21 season even began, because the Ravens had too many cornerbacks. Then Dalen Hayes, big disappointment, largely due to injury, unfortunate. Ben Mason, terrible overdraft, and gone to the Patriots after being cut in that same season. But he's still around the NFL, according to this.
Yeah, the ultimate head-scratcher pick from our hero, Eric DaCosta.
Yeah. Okay, quickly going through 22. It's looking like 2018 against folks. They had a lot of picks, and a lot of them hit. Kyle Hamilton at number 14 overall in the first round. Tyler Linderbaum at 25. Both those are players we're going to be discussing today. David Ajabo, a frustrating failed pick, I think you'd have to say now, in the second round at number 45. Travis Jones at number 76, one of the really great third-round picks in Ravens history again. Daniel Falele at 110. Didn't look like much going into this year, but he had a pretty good final five games, and now looks like a pretty damn good value pick at number 110.
Yep, give him 3 years. You know, ain't that the Aussie rule, and you'll know what you have. So, and Falele's trended up significantly these last, especially the last half of the year. So,
yeah, incredibly, every single one of these players, and they had 11 draft picks, is still in the NFL. Jalen Armour-Davis hanging on by his fingernails, but he probably gets a chance to play somewhere this next year. He may be fifth on the Ravens totem pole, or he may be with another team, but I think he'll play somewhere in 2025. Charlie Kohler, a lot of value to the Ravens. Fourth round, 128. Jordan Stout at number 130. Yeah, he might have been an overdraft, but still a lot of value. Can you imagine missing out on Isaiah Likely at 139 because you drafted Jordan Stout at 130?
No, I can't. And I don't want to, Ken.
And then Pepe Williams, drafted just two later. He, according to this, he's looking like he's still in the league somewhere, but he did not actually play in 2024. For anyone. So he's probably on the practice squad for some team. And then Tyler Beatty was their final pick, and he did not work out, although he did play and had, wow, look at this, 11 carries for 86 for Denver this year. So he had 7.8 yards per carry in very limited duty.
Yeah, so, you would. And when you go back and look at some of these lower end guys, like, oh, he's still on a roster somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's like, this just is not normal. To hit, I mean, what was that? Four misses out of like 20 picks in those two drafts or three drafts. I mean, it's just crazy. It's really crazy.
And they have, I think, by my count, they have seven guys, and I'm not including JAD or Ajabo in this group, but they have seven guys that they would like to keep on the team still beyond year four from the 2022 draft. That is really fantastic.
Steelers have zero right now, Ken. Zero.
Wow.
Okay. Zero.
All right. So, with that backdrop, you know, Eric DaCosta has always given us great drafts, and that forces the Ravens into utter heartbreak at this time, which is the process we're trying to go through. And yeah, you can only re-sign so many of these players. You can only afford so many of these players for long term. And then you're going to have more draft picks that come along in the future Kyle Hamiltons and the future Rashad Batemans, who you're going to want to re-sign for more years. And you got to consider them as well.
Correct. You're always replenishing, you know, the roster, and those 10 roster spots are typically going to go to draft picks or eight or 10 of them or what have you, considering how well, you know, the Ravens have been recently in drafting. So yeah, there's always fresh blood coming in.
All right. So I'll go with one major difference between the 2018 draft and the 2022 draft. And that is the 2022 draft. Those players are all still in-house currently, with the exception of the final two selections, Pepe and Tyler Beatty. They're gone. But the rest of the nine picks, they're all still with the Ravens, which is incredible to me. Comparing this to 2018, and here's the difference. Ravens had 12 picks that year, but they unwound that draft relatively quickly with the understanding that they weren't going to be able to keep everybody and they really wanted to get draft value. So let's go over that a little bit. Hayden Hurst was traded after 2 years with the Ravens for a second round pick. I thought they got very good value out of that. I wish they hadn't picked him originally, but you know, that's well known who I would have taken at that spot. Lamar Jackson, of course, still with the team. What do you know? Orlando Brown was unwound after his third season. Some of it was because he wanted to play left tackle, but wouldn't you agree that it had to meet the Ravens' need too to get him traded to Kansas City at that point?
Absolutely. Totally agree.
So you go down the rest of the list from 2018. Mark Andrews still with the team. Anthony Averett, good career at the Ravens, allowed to walk at the end of his fourth season. Kenny Young tossed an ice cream cone on the floor of Eric DaCosta's office, traded for Marcus Peters in a wonderful year. So they got value out of him. Then two goof ups who each didn't work out for various reasons at wide receiver. Jaleel Scott, just a little bit awkward and gangly, never really got it together. And Jordan Lasley, who got upset and threw a football into the pond that I think was the beginning of the end for him as a Raven. But those are really the only two guys who didn't work out. Then how about Deshaun Elliott as a sixth round pick, who just had what I would consider to be very close to an all pro season at safety for the Steelers this year.
Yeah, the Steelers fan base is looking to try to re-sign him after what he's on a 2-year, $6 million deal right now. So he's going into the final year. And I suspect that there's another sixth round pick. You know what I mean? And now look where he's, I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah, I think they're going to sign him to a little deal here this offseason.
Well, I hope he really sticks it to them for the most possible. And then, wish bad things on Deshaun Elliott, but I hope he really sticks it to him with a big contract. Patrick Queen's missed tackle caddy. There's a guy who's cleaning up for Patrick Queen. Greg Sinnott, a guy they tried to keep around. They tried to slip him through to the practice squad. It didn't work. He got picked up, of course, because he's a size and shape tackle. He stayed in the league for a few years, playing for the Browns and some other teams. Dallas in 2020. Actually, it looks like he might have been on the Browns practice squad, but I think his only playing time is with Dallas in 2020, actually. So a little surprising. Just finishing this off here. Bradley Bozeman still in the league now. And Zach Sealer, not only is he still in the league, he was the first guy re-signed out of this entire 2018 draft pick, despite the fact that he was a seventh round pick, re-signed by the Miami Dolphins and was a Miami Dolphins MVP this year.
Yeah, again, I keep saying it. This type of success, especially late, is just not normal. It's just really not, you know.
Yeah, Sealer, if he still were with the Ravens, he'd be very clearly the best seventh round pick the Ravens ever made. Now there are a few players who you can fit in that, including maybe Geno Stone, depending on how you want to define it. But we'll get past that. I want to talk about the defense and talk about who you have as the key re-signings for this defense and what you'd pay within the context of all the success and all the money they can't pay to everybody.
Correct. So I guess we'll start off with what I think is definitely going to be the most economical signing, and that's our Darius Washington. I mean, think of the last 365 days for our Darius here. He's gone from, you know, on the fringes to maybe even not being in the league, to now he's put himself in a position from that point to might be able to get himself a nice little payday here and secure his future. And I don't think this is going to be hard. I mean, they're obviously going to tender him the $5.2 million second round level. They couldn't do it with the original draft because that wouldn't work. So in that case, I mean, again, I think we're pretty much in the same ballpark here with maybe a little 3-year, $14 to $15 million extension, something in that range, knowing that if he's actually on the field and healthy, he's probably worth double that, if we're being honest. So I kind of think that's the sweet spot as far as he is concerned. And that would take his cap number down from 5.2 to about 3.2 in 2025. So we could save a couple dollars there too as well.
Washington's a very interesting player because if you look at his OTC valuation, you get something like $3 million. He's worth more to the Ravens than he is to other teams because that versatility is something the Ravens can really use. Now, some other teams can use it too, but not all. He has a strange situation of being a Bob Sanders-like body. He's too small to play the position, so you think there's probably a higher risk of injury. I think there are some reasons why you might not go 3 for $15 million. I think it's a little bit lower than that is the right number. Now, the Ravens have a way to address this. If they really don't think there's a market for Ardarius Washington out there, the thing they could say is, hey, Ardarius, we can't give you the top tender, but we can give you the, not the original round tender. What's it called? The one where they get to match the offer. So it's not the original round tender. It's what it's called something else. But it's anyway.
It's original round tender. Then it goes to second. I thought the original round tender is where you get.
Okay. And so he's a UDFA. Can they still give him an original round tender that basically they get to match the
offer? He's a restricted free agent.
He's an RFA. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you said UDFA, but so I'm not sure exactly that off the top of my head. I thought it went.
No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. I meant he was a UDFA originally, so he doesn't have a round. So can he get an original round tender in his fourth year, his RFA year, based on a UDFA standing originally? And I don't know the answer to that, but okay. if they can get the ability to match any of what the contract that anybody else gives him, they can say, hey, Ardarius, we'll tell you what, we'll give you 3 years for $11.5 million right now is what we can tell you right now. We think you're worth every penny. You certainly bailed us out this last year. We really appreciate you. But if you'd like to take that to the market, we don't even have a problem with that. Go find your value from the market. Have somebody else do it. It'll be with this tender where we get to match that offer. And they may even find somebody who comes up with good terms and prices the market for the Ravens in a way they'd be very happy with, 4 years for $16 million, say, that they might really like the terms of that deal and be willing to sign him for that.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that I did not realize about that original round tender. That's a good point that I did not factor in. I'm not sure how that works, but I'm not sure. But like I said, think about this. If you're Ardarius Washington and they're going to give you that $5.2 million tender, assuming that, is he going to want to lock up 3 more years for essentially that same amount of a signing bonus, which he would be guaranteed anyway in 2025? Now, again, you have his injury history and that risks the price in. But I wonder if that would be good enough for him to lock up those free agent years.
It's a real question. I mean, he very well could say, I'll play for whatever the tender is this year. But I that's one of the questions, is how much is that tender relative to the 5.2? Because he's not guaranteed. First of all, he's not guaranteed the 5.2. It's a non-guaranteed tender. You know about that, right? They could just say we don't want it.
2 is the original tender, right? So that one's below the 2. And so, yeah, it would be much less. But again, if he even has a original round tender is the question, right?
If it's even available. So anyway. Right. We're not too far off in terms of the value. Everybody in Baltimore, I think, wants Ardarius Washington back after the season he just had. It's a matter of economizing and trying to figure out what value you can get. And honestly, even if Ardarius is back, the Ravens are going to draft a safety, and the Ravens will probably have a different back end partner for him a lot. And it may be that Ardarius Washington's playing time drops to a Geno Stone level, where he's only could be on the field in both a slot role and a back end role, or he could be on the field only on certain downs, like the way Geno Stone was in his final year with the Ravens.
Yeah, that's totally a possibility and definitely a good point.
All right, let's move on. Who's the next player you want to talk about?
Well, we're going to talk about Kyle Hamilton. I think this one should be pretty easy as far as what the number is going to be on an extension. I think the question is he going to sign it 2 years early? I don't claim to have any knowledge of what he might be thinking or what he might do, but the top safety contract previously is right about $25 million average annual value and $84 million total. I have him on a 4-year, $104 million extension, which would put him at $26 million average annual value. It would beat the next best safety by $1 million there and by $20 million combined. But just like with Lamar Jackson, I'm trying to get Kyle Hamilton signed as early as humanly possible and to get him locked up and to get that taken care of, because Kyle's basically to the defense what Lamar is maybe in a slightly lesser role to the offense. I mean, he's that important. He's that good. And I think we should do that.
Let's be clear again, because this has been It's a little bit different for each one, but in this case, Kyle Hamilton is signed through 2024. And then you'd be extending, through 2025. You'd be extending him for 26 through 29, and you wouldn't be messing with that fifth-year option. So you're not trying to get him for the 25 price, then the 2026 fifth-year option price, and then 4 years. But that option price is definitely, it's dragging down, it's weighing down on his ability to get the most possible money from the market in his case, because he's got surplus value to even the fifth-year option value.
Right, and if you want to play that out even further, you go fifth year, then you go tag. You know what I mean? There's a little bit of leverage the Ravens can use there as well, saying, look, we're making you the highest paid safety in the NFL right now. Again, it would help them extremely to spread the cap hit out over time. Again, it's only going to get expensive. Now, it's safety, probably not going to get that much more expensive considering the market. But again, I'm trying to get this done sooner rather than later and have that taken off Eric's plate.
Okay. I completely view Hamilton as the ace of trumps in terms of where you can play him on the defense, move him around, use him whenever you want. But here's the question I would have. Do you think that Hamilton's people would allow him to sign for five for 130 that would keep him in Baltimore through 2030 on this same deal?
Well, just like with Lamar Jackson, I'm shooting for as long as possible. You know, the player tends to push back on that usually, especially at the very top of the structure. So yeah, if he wants to do five, let's do five. You know what I mean? Okay. I want to lock his price in for as long as possible to get that. And one other factor is with Hamilton. Okay, another reason why I want to get this done now. What if he goes out and wins Defensive Player of the Year next year, which is a distinct, not outlandish possibility. And then he starts making the argument for defensive playmaker contract versus top of the safety contract, which he could probably make an argument for if that happened. So again, I'm trying to get this guy locked up right now.
Okay. I all that very reasonable. I certainly want to see him. I wanted to see a list here and see if he was on the list anywhere for odds. I don't have it here. I'll keep looking for it during the rest of the show as we're doing it. I actually think it's pretty low probability of a safety winning the DPOY. So, it probably won't happen, but he is a one of one player, and we certainly need to keep him.
I just think he's that special, Ken. I mean, I know the probabilities are low, obviously, but it could happen.
All right. And by the way, Hamilton is the sort of player too, that the Ravens could mitigate some of the injury risk with a contract by having injury insurance. And that's a way to effectively buy additional cap, because they get a cap refund in terms of a refund from player as it's done. At least that's the current rule in the NFL. And the Browns may be getting a significant payoff on Deshaun Watson's contract next year. In that regard, they have insurance on the deal. He had the setback in terms of his Achilles injury. Probably he's not going to be able to play in 2025. I know the Browns don't want him to play, and they can get a significant portion of that contract back, whatever the insured portion is.
Yeah, I've heard that as well, but the source I kind of am iffy with, because it's usually coming from Florio, and he usually likes to float these insurance and weird possibilities. And from what I've read, it's not likely, but I'm not sure, so I don't want to state that. But I don't know if they're going to be bailed out like they think they are.
Okay. All right. We'll see if that works out. Who do you want to talk about next?
So next, let's go to Travis Jones, our big, giant, double-team-taking monster in the middle next to Matt BK.
All right. It sounds great. I'm for it. He's one of the most important players to lock down if you can. And those two together make a great defensive line pairing. It's a lot of money to commit to the defensive line, but on the other hand, it's a hell of a pairing.
Well, here's what I'll say when I put this together, Ken, is that there are not a lot of Travis Joneses in this league anymore. It's really shifting to a more lighter player on the D-line in general. So finding comps for Travis Jones was extremely hard. I mean, there's only really a few guys out there that kind of have his role and what he does. And I actually thought I had him pegged for a lot more than I feel like he's going to get initially after I started looking through all the stuff.
Okay, so your guys you have a long list of players here. But who are the guys you think are really comp to him?
Well, I mean, if you look again, I put all his stats in here just to kind of see where he ranks, and he just really doesn't light up the stat sheet like a lot of these other guys. I mean, I think he's clearly he's not in the top tier here, obviously. He's definitely not in the second tier. So you go down to this next tier and you're at about the 12 to 14 million range, average annual value. And I think he fits kind of right in there. And even kind of trends toward the bottom, considering some of his lack of sexy stats, so to speak. Now, I'm not sure what the Pro Football Focus grade has or what you see. I know you love him. We love him as Ravens fans. Mm-hmm. But I think kind of the 3 for 36 range or 4.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. We ask that you kindly not be that guy, and instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone from their top brands in any condition on any unlimited plan for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 with Galaxy AI. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
4 for 48 range is where we'd like to be with him. And if you think about what his upside is, I don't think it's that much at what he's playing and how he's playing. It's not like he's going to go out there and get 6 sacks next year or do something crazy with the role he's currently in right now. So I think the upside for him waiting is fairly limited, if we're being honest. And the downside is definitely there, you know, if he gets hurt or something. So I think this should get done in that 12 to 14 range, if I had to guess.
Okay. I would love if that were the case. I just don't believe it is. I'm looking at Christian Barmore, and what draft did he come out of? He's the same age. He came out of the 21 drafts. He's 1 year earlier in a very, very lean time. And he did have an 8.5 sack season in 23, which is, I think, what his contract was based on, right? He signed it. Yeah, after the 23 season, right?
Yeah, he signed in 2024 after the 23 season.
Okay. All right. And he had a big year with 8.5 sacks that year and got $84 million for 4 years, right?
Yeah. And again, that's what drives a lot of these top end numbers is those sacks, pressures, tackles, plays behind the line of scrimmage. And Jones is just really deficient across the board in those areas, as much as we love him. I mean, just trying to look at it objectively. Like, I just don't see an argument to get him into that upper tier. I really don't.
Okay. I guess I would probably agree that Barmore is definitely a step ahead. But even if you look at what you've done, which is present valuing these AAV numbers to 2025. Great step here, by the way. Mm-hmm. We talked about it in a previous episode, but it's outstanding. You've got nine guys on the defensive line now across the league that have an adjusted 2025 AAV of 20 million or higher. And that mm-hmm. does include some players like...
Is he a Grady Jarrett or an Ed Oliver type level player? I mean, these guys have high draft pedigree. Like, I don't see him in that group, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. I would hope that he could get into that group. And so where's Ed Oliver in terms of his sacks or anything? Ed Oliver had three sacks this year.
Just look at the sacks pre-contract for that group, Ed. I mean, he's 3.5. We're going 22, 14.5, 25, 11. Forget Hayward, 12.5. I mean, again, and that's what makes the money. You know what I mean? A lot of the times in these contracts. So, and every other, you know, I would trend to lower, if anything.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, I mean, it certainly could work out for the Ravens. I think in a lot of ways he drives the Ravens pass rush. So I'm excited about keeping him. And if they could do it at 12 to 14 million of AEV currently, fantastic. I'd be all over it. I'd be 3 years at 39, 3 years at 42, whichever one you wanted to say. And you're probably right. I'm not really that excited about 3 year extension at 48. And I'd be fine getting him for 4 years as well, if you wanted to do that.
Originally in more of the 15, 16 range, average annual value. But then, like I said, after I kind of went through it, I kind of knocked that down a tiny bit because I just can't see him comparing with some of the guys in that range. So
now here is a big factor that a lot of the other guys on this list don't have. So a lot of the other guys are older now. They're in the 30s. Most of them are in their early 30s. Draymond Jones is still in his late 20s, and you got a few others on this list. Zach Allen is at 28. But Travis Jones is 25 years old, and he won't turn 26 until October of this next season. That is a great time to get a value signing on a player, and the Ravens have been very good at that. I think it's going to push up his market value.
Yeah, I mean, if you look under the R column going into the contract when they were signed, most of these guys are signing around 27, 28. There's a 26 guy, one guy in there.
Who's so, the 26? Yeah. I'm not looking at it right now.
Okay, I'm sorry. But he's definitely a touch younger than the others would typically be. A lot of these guys went to free agency versus got extended. So that's where that extra year comes in at.
Okay, so they're going into contract year. Their age was, like, I see a bunch of 26s here. Okay, I got it. I got it now. I'm with you. So Ed Oliver, for example, was 26 when he went into it. And Vita Vea, whose contract has been adjusted up, was 26 when he went to it. So it's not that unusual. Christian Barmore was very unusual to be in there at 24 because he was after his third year that he got signed to this deal. And that would be the case with Jones here, and he would be at 25, and he'd be the second youngest player on this entire list after Barmore in terms of, you know, the year he, going into that year is when he your age is it the December 31st age or the 9-1 age, or what did you use?
Yeah. Your age season is going to be what your age is at the December 31st of that season.
Okay, perfect. All right. Well, you know, hey, it would be great if they could get him in that range. And I'm signing up for it immediately. I think if I had to look at who are the players that'll be the most trouble to sign for the amount you have, Ronnie Stanley on the offensive side and Travis Jones on the defensive side would be my two guys so far.
I think you might agree with the next one too, and that's Odafe Owe. Mm-hmm. Which I was just, again, listening to your podcast before this, and he came up, and this is one where I think there could be a difference in opinion versus the team versus himself. Mm-hmm. But so Owe, again, one great year of production, pretty much. Not exactly a long track record. And tell me if I'm wrong here, Ken, because again, when I was going through all the numbers and the measurables and stuff, he's really, I don't want to say a one-trick pony, but he kind of is in a way, because he clearly isn't dropping into coverage at all, mainly playing on passing downs. So kind of the overall versatility and package might be a little lighter than you might think. And again, you know, we're talking about one season of production here, you know, versus it, multiple.
You're correct on everything. What I would say is there are a couple of points I'd make about OA. First of all, he had 10 sacks this year, or 10 and a half, whatever it was. He did so with a much higher close rate than he's ever had before. So his pyramid of pressures, as I put it, is not sustainable. So what you want is you want a guy with a lot of pressures at the bottom that leads to fewer quarterback hits, that leads to fewer sacks at the top. Sacks are, generally speaking, not exactly, but a subset of quarterback hits. And quarterback hits are a subset of pressures, again, generally speaking. You want that relationship to be as wide-based as possible to have the best chance for being replicated in the next season. So sometimes PFF will say that the pressures are more predictable than the other finishes. And he had Travis Jones, Matabike, and Van Noy all helped him get some additional finishes in this year. It's something he had to do. He needed more finishes, but he also had actually a few less pressures. So it's one of the most dramatic rises in finish rate I've ever seen. He went from, I think, 26% to 50% between 23 and 24. I don't think 50% is going to be sustainable. And when I say finishes, that means a sack or a quarterback hit on that play. I don't think that's sustainable. So
yeah, no. And that was one of the things I wanted to bring up that you said in the other podcast about that finish rate.
Yeah.
You know, jumping up so high in 2024, and you know, that you got to proceed with caution when you see something like that, because before last year he was, you know, a 5-sack guy, pretty much 5-6 sack guy. So if that finish rate normalizes and regresses back to the mean, is he that same 6-8 sack guy again? You know what I mean? And what is that worth? And there's minimal value elsewhere as far as outside of just rushing the passer. So when you factor all this in, I think where the Ravens would be comfortable is somewhere in like the $16 million range. Now, I could totally see him saying, you know what, I'm going to go back out there in 2025, and I'm going to get 12 to 14 sacks, and I'm going to make $25 million. Could happen. But there's also just as likely a chance as that does not happen, and you do regress. And then where are you at salary-wise if you're just more of a role pass rusher versus that upper echelon total complete package pass rusher? So, again, it's a balance to where the player has to assess that risk versus reward possibility. And I think that could be where this gap is. And I would not be surprised if maybe he did bet on himself like that and just played out the fifth year. Now, what I will say about the fifth year option is if we do extend him, his cap number will drop by about $4 or $5 million.
Right.
But the 13.25 that he's getting in this coming season, I think that's pretty much exactly what he's worth. So if the Ravens were forced to kind of let him play that out, I think they're getting the exact value of kind of where he's at right now. So, you know, if that happens, I don't think they'd have a problem with it.
So I don't disagree with you, by the way, on that's pretty close to his value at $13.25 million. But there is an issue that as an AAV, that's paid over decreasing value dollars as the cap increases. So as an AAV, let's say you're paying him, okay, let's say you want to pay him $14 million per year, but you can do it two different ways. You can pay him 14 for 1 year, or you can pay him 11, 13, 15, 16 for an average of 14 over the four-year period. The second way is highly preferable in terms of paying an increasing amount each year, and that's why contracts are structured the way they are. One of the questions that immediately comes up is how much does this plan go out the window by having OA play on the fifth year option? Because that's $5 million of cap space you made in this plan that has to be recovered from somewhere else.
Correct. But like I said, I was very conservative elsewhere. So if we need to squeeze out another $5 or $10 million or backload another deal, we could easily do that. But I mean, it definitely would help. You know what I mean? If we could get him locked up and under control, you know, for the next combined 5 seasons on this 4-year extension, but this is the one that I thought, you know, there's a decent chance where they're going to see a difference in what they perceive each other's value is.
Yeah, and I, you know what? I completely agree. I think he's the biggest risk. In some ways, it's the biggest amount of divisible benefit on the table, and I also think because it's a premium position that Owe has probably a better chance to win the bet, whereas a player like Fa'alele or maybe Ardarius Washington has a better chance to lose the bet. And so they're you know going to be much more likely to sign this kind of a deal. So I think the fact that he's on the fifth-year option actually gives him leverage, as you've kind of indicated here, and that's a good reason. Well, let's move on. But it does look, if I had to project the guy who's most likely to leave Baltimore in 26, then Owe is probably the guy, and that makes it a premium position, area of great need for the draft.
The number one need, and it's probably not even close if we don't get him extended.
Yeah, it'd be left tackle if no Stanley, but yeah, correct. I would agree. Yeah. Talk about Marlon Humphrey next?
Yeah, so next up, Marlon Humphrey is another guy, just like with Mark Andrews. I wanted to really dig in and see, you know, where the top corners ended their careers, what age, what was their performance, how healthy were they going into those years? And I didn't put this on the sheet, but what I did was all of these corners that are above Marlon Humphrey are the ones on the Hall of Fame monitor list, you know, highest on the Hall of Fame monitor list on Pro Football Reference. So the top 10 or so are already in the Hall of Fame, and these next, you know, 10 or so are kind of knocking on the door, but a couple of them are, well, actually a lot of them are still playing. And these are all guys that Marlon Humphrey is probably going to jump in the near future if he keeps his play up. And I know you've been talking a whole lot about, well, let's move him to safety. And that's another reason why I really wanted to dive in and see, when does that usually happen? Do they play corner for an extended period of time? And what I did was just average it out. And the average of all these top 25 guys of when they stopped playing cornerback and were either forced to retire or move to safety was age 34. And Marlon Humphrey, again, just like Andrews, is in this group and moving up the list every season that he plays. So, I mean, again, Marlon is going into his age 29 year. He does have 2 years left, so an extension for him. I have, again, this would be a team-friendly third contract type of deal, because I'm sure if he went to the market, even after, you know, because my thing from the Ravens would be, he's probably not going to see that last year, regardless of the situation. So if we assume he would play out this final year and then go to the market, I still think he would get a decent amount of change just due to his history and what he's done and how good he's been.
Just to be clear on Marlon's contract, his current contract, he signed and is slated to make, doesn't matter what his cap number is, but his cap number is 25.4 million. What matters is the Ravens have about 9.7 million they can save if they decided to cut him. And they could save even more if they make him a post June 1 cut. Not that I would recommend that. That just, all that does is kick some of the dead money into 2026.
Correct. And if they extended him, if they gave him my projected 3-year extension, his 2025 cap number would decrease by 11.4 million. So again, he's another guy, third contract, legacy Raven. I think there's a way to come together on a number that protects the team on the back end and still keeps him in the fold and, you know, lets him pretty much finish out his career, or what's most of it, as a Raven.
And because, by the way, I want to get to this real quickly here, because I just got a response from Brian McFarland on the Ardarius contract. He says, yes, they can give Ardarius the low tender, but since he was undrafted, there's no draft pick compensation coming back. We knew that. If they declined a match, that's risky. As such, I'm expecting the second round tender. See, I'm not saying this is the way to go, but I think his value is actually a little bit less than what his contract is under the tender. And so I would be tempted to let the market determine what Ardarius's contract value is and then happily match it. Even if it's a little bit higher, just happily match it and you know, effectively allow Ardarius maybe to earn a little bit more money than, and a little bit earlier than he otherwise would.
Right. Cause if you put the second round tender on him, he can still negotiate.
No, he can't. He can't.
Oh, he can't. Okay.
Well, he can, but realistically, no one's going to trade a second round pick for Ardarius Washington.
Right. No, I'm just talking about numbers wise. I'm talking about numbers wise, not the actual deal getting done.
It cuts off all negotiation. If there's a second round comp pick, if there's a second round pick attached to signing Ardarius Washington, it's lights out on those phone calls.
I got you.
Yeah. I just want to catch up on that before that, but going back to the Marlon Humphrey. So a huge part of your plan here is getting Humphrey to sign a team friendly assumption, a contract that will reduce his cap hit dramatically. What if Marlon says, "Now look, you've made it real clear to me. You're not going to let me play 26 under this contract. I'm going to want a higher percentage guaranteed, a higher percentage up front, if you're going to re-sign me to a longer deal. And I still want a lot of money in the contract."
Okay. Well, consider this. If we did sign him to an extension, let's see here. He would get, you know, with that signing bonus and everything, a substantial payout again, you know, in 2025. And again, with Marlon, I kind of feel like it's, again, we're coming at this from a position of relative strength. I mean, we're not going to force him to take anything or overpay, because I don't think we really need to. If all else fails, we still have him, you know, for two more years, whether, you know, he plays that out or not. But I just think at this point in Marlon's career, with where this team is at, that he's going to be fairly receptive to finishing his career out as a Raven. And just with a little hometown discount, not a crazy one, but again, just enough to make it worthwhile for the Ravens to go down a route. And again, then you have the added benefit of saving all this money by getting that new extension done and being able to rework all these numbers versus his massive $25 million cap number, you know, in 2025.
Okay. Probably looks a tad optimistic to me. Is what I'll leave it at. Would love if they could get it done. And your AAV on it is, you're adding 3 for $48 to the current deal essentially, or you're replacing the last 2 years with a 3 for $48.
Correct. Yes. And like I said, if I think what I've noticed in general is that when you have these elite upper end players and they get to their third contract, their third contract is kind of around what their second one was, average annual value. Because when you take in the cap increases,
inflated value is less.
Second one, you know what I mean? It kind of works out to where if you're going to give them a third one, it's in that same range. So that would be in the $19 million range in Humphrey's case. But it's weird. It tends to work out like that, with Cameron Hayward for the Steelers, who just signed a new one last year. Same thing. He was on a $16 million AAV second. He got a $16 million AAV third. I mean, now this is only true for these higher-end players, but that's kind of how it usually works out. So, again, market value, I'm guessing, would probably be more 18, 19. So if we could kind of get him back in that 15, 16 range and decrease that cap number a decent amount, I mean, I just think it would be a win-win for everybody. I mean, I know he had the injuries last year, but really hasn't been that injured as a player. I think his best year of his career in 2024, maybe you disagree. Right.
No, I'm right there with you. That's the problem, is that I think that Humphrey is going to say, look at the year I just had. I'm worth a lot more than that. And you've done a great job on this, Paul. Don't get me wrong. I disagree with some of the optimism on this in terms of the value. I think he probably ends up being slightly higher than this. Maybe it's 3 for $18. He's still got a cap reduction at 3 for $18.
And if he forces your hand at 3 for $18, am I going to say no? Like, probably not if I'm Eric DaCosta, but I'm shooting for the moon here a little bit, you know what I mean, to try to get him to work with us. And again, I'll just go back to the Lamar team effect, you know what I mean? Does he really want to step outside and go somewhere else to an unknown situation, or does he kind of want to stay here and try to win a Super Bowl?
All right. Outstanding. In the case of Humphrey, it'd be risky because he'll be 29, I think, in July. But would you try and sign him to a even longer contract? So would you go 5 years again instead of three, with the understanding that he'd be moving to safety during that time? By the way, I think before you answer that question, I think there's a problem with the way you looked at the guys to look at when they changed to safety. And the problem is that you're only looking at when great players move to safety, as opposed to when a broader set of players, like Hall of Famers, move to safety, as opposed to a broader set of players that includes some lesser guys. Now, I'm not saying Marlon Humphrey belongs in either group decidedly, but he's definitely not a sure Hall of Famer at this point in his career.
No, what I would say is I will not say he's a sure Hall of Famer. Uh-huh. I will say that you have to put certain players in with their peers. Like Marlon Humphrey is a former first round pick, Pro Bowl, All Pro. I mean, I know you can say we want to include lesser players, but lesser players don't play that long. They fade out earlier. So true, I feel enough. Like you have to put him where he belongs. And he's probably going to be, I'd say, knocking on the door of the Hall of Fame, maybe not there. Mm-hmm. But again, I mean, these guys, these top end guys, these Hall of Fame, maybe kind of close to Hall of Fame, former first round pick pedigrees, they tend to hold up. You know what I mean? And I totally get your concern going past age 30 and all that. And with your 5 year plan, I'd be totally down for that. You know what I mean? That would be interesting.
It would spread it out more. It's a risky contract, but hopefully. Yeah.
I think if we did the 3 years, we'd still be in a fine position at the end of those three to do that if he wanted a safety contract versus doing it now, way ahead of, you know, what we kind of know. But it could work.
Valid point. And again, Humphrey is a guy who is in the Ring of Honor already for what he's done for the Ravens. There's no doubt about that. He'll come back and have a special day for him at some point in his career, and he'll always be one of those guys that'll have back for the on-field things. Part of the Ravens, one of the Ravens' most beloved players, certainly on the current roster. I really hope that it works out. I think that part of the fact that I love him at safety so much, and he's been really great playing the slot too, is that it gives you the flexibility to use Hamilton differently. And it's actually funny because they felt the loss of Hamilton less moving to safety because Humphrey has a number of similar characteristics to Hamilton. They're both very physical guys. Humphrey's not quite as big, but he's certainly a physical cornerback, good downhill player, good side to side player, great coming off his man, which is something Hamilton, you know, has done pretty well. It's just they missed that less because of Humphrey being able to move to the slot. And it's still, I think, Humphrey, as much as Hamilton, probably more, would become a great NFL free safety. He could be the kind of guy who, from what we've seen of him seeing the field, the brains he has, the instincts he has, I think he could become just an unbelievably great NFL safety.
Yeah, no, I'm not disputing that at all. I'm not disputing that one bit. He's got the build. He's got the strength. He's got the size. He would be a perfect, you know, safety. But if you look at from Marlon's perspective, he's going to be much less. Well, I think he's going to be less willing to do that before he has to, because obviously safety's pay scale is not the same as a corner's pay scale. So a lot of times players are a little reluctant to kind of make that move until they're absolutely forced to. But I totally get what you're saying within this defense about how he could be deployed in a Hamilton-esque way. Yeah. So,
and it's he'd be a Hamilton plus in this way. Hamilton can't play on the outside, but Humphrey can. If they need him back on the outside and he's playing safety for the team, no problem. He moves right back there. So I do kind of like that.
Yeah, but whatever he's playing, I really want him here for the next few years to kind of solidify that veteran presence. You know, with Wiggins being over there on the other side as a young guy, I really think this is a deal that should, and I hope, really happens, whatever the number may be. It just makes a lot of sense for both parties, I think, whatever the number comes out to.
It's just some outstanding work here, Paul. Really appreciate having you on and going through this. Whether we have some small disagreements on the optimism of some numbers, or maybe you're paying too much for another guy, I'm very excited about this work and how you put it together, how you ordered it. By the way, I've almost never done this, but because I don't like people to like give me a presentation to go through a 2 or 3 part series. But effectively, that's what we've done with Paul's work because it's so well ordered and so well put together. And yet we're still able to have it in the form of a discussion, which I really appreciate, Paul. That's exactly what I'm looking for. This kind of content is exactly what I'm looking for in terms of shorts. And if you think you have to live up to this as a standard, you don't need to. Just honestly, 3 bullet points of something you want to discuss would be terrific. But Paul, thank you so much for putting together this outstanding material. I want to find a way that you can share this file with other people on Twitter so that they can see how you've analyzed these contracts and present valued them to 2025 to comp players for where you think people belong. But thanks for all your great work.
No, I totally appreciate all the kind words. I love numbers, and I love diving into numbers to see what they tell us. And you can really learn a lot when you go through an exercise like this of things you might not have realized before. So I appreciate it. And yeah, I'll figure out a way to get the link on Twitter so everybody can see it. And hope you see some value in it, or they find some value in it.
Paul, where can people talk football with you online?
Twitter.com, at the NFLanalyst.com. I'm there way too much. Holler at me, follow me, DM me if you want me to send you the sheet through email. I'm available all the time.
I think you might actually be able to share via Twitter. Didn't we just do that?
Yes. Yeah. You might
be able to share via Twitter.
Not exactly technically proficient, Ken. So
I believe me, at age 61, I feel a little bit of that too. The world is passing me by in a lot of technical ways. So, but I do appreciate that. Paul, thanks so much for coming on. Other folks out there, if you want to do a film study short, hit me up. Timing is perfect. Thanks for all the listens. We really appreciate that. Anytime you can add one more listener by showing this to a friend, that's our preferred way of growing as opposed to algorithmic growth. We do really depend on you to tell that next person to give the show a try. Paul, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken. Appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority. But to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. Obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one compliance solution helping startups get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. Vanta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. The platform connects you with trusted experts to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vanta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including Y Combinator and Techstar startups, who trust Vanta. For a limited time, get $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/simplify. That's VANTA.com/simplify for $1,000 off.